You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time for our weekly catch-up with National Party MP James Meagher.
Welcome back to The Wire. Last week, the Coalition Government released an action plan discussing their goals for the next quarter. In the plan was a list of 36 policies, some vague and some specific, addressing issues across various sectors. I asked James about several of these policies, including number 4 discussing transport, number 17 on the Holidays Act, number 19 on the repeal of the ban on oil and gas exploration, and number 36 on the repeal of section 7AA of the Oranga Tamariki Act. We discuss each of these policies and how they could develop as the government continues past its first 100 days. Today we're covering the government's new action plan released last week. Broadly, what does this plan allow the government to do?
Well, it basically sets out the key steps we're going to be taking over the next quarter. So everyone will probably be aware of that first 100-day plan, and that was the 49 action points that we wanted to get out of the way and hit the ground running. And this is just the next sort of set of steps that we've indicated to the public about what they can expect to see from the government over the next quarter. And it's sort of focused on three main areas: rebuilding the economy, easing the cost of living, restoring law and order, and delivering better public services. And there's about 36 points throughout that.
There's a few policies on the plan that I wanted to go into in a little bit more detail. Firstly, policy 4 says the government will finalise the government policy statement on land transport, freezing fuel tax until the end of 2026, and delivering significant investment for transport. Could this transport investment end up in public transport, like buses or trains, or is it more likely that we'll see it in other endeavours, such as fixing our roads?
Yeah, it'll be both. So the government policy statement on transport, the draft, was released in the first quarter, and this will be the next step of it. Now it's consultation. It'll come back and it'll be finalised by government, and then it'll go off to be worked into regional land transport plan and then the national land transport plan, and that's where the projects themselves actually get the funding. So we will see a mix of the public transport class, but also a greater investment on maintaining and upgrading our roading network, because we think that if you're going to have good public transport like buses, you've got to have good roads to drive them on as well.
Moving on to section 17, which states that the government will take decisions on the reform of the Holidays Act, is there any indication about what this reform could look like, or is it still early days?
Well, I'm not an expert in this subject matter, and I've got to be a little bit careful about what I say about what I know, because we did some work on this for a department when I was practicing law. But the gist of it is that the Holidays Act, for many, many years, gave people holidays entitlements. Well, employers thought they were giving the right holiday entitlements, and it turns out that there's an interpretation of the law which says they weren't. And so this has had a whole lot of government departments caught up in it to the cost of potentially billions and billions of dollars. So the Minister for Workplace Relations is looking at the reforms, the work that the previous government undertook, and is trying to figure out how do we make sure the Holidays Act is clear enough so that people get the entitlements that they are entitled to in terms of their holidays, and that we don't have this misinterpretation going forward. And then how do we also take account of the money that's owed for government departments over quite a few years?
There were talks when Matariki was added as a public holiday and a bit moving into the election campaign last year of perhaps swapping out or removing another of the public holidays. Should we expect conversations or legislation around the number of public holidays moving forward?
No, I don't think that's what these reforms are about. These are very much tidying up the interpretation of what you're entitled to. And it comes when people don't work your stereotypical 35, 40-hour weeks. So that's what the reforms are. These aren't to do with how many public holidays or what the days are, anything like that.
Moving on to policy 19 now, which talks about decisions on the removal of the ban on offshore oil and gas exploration. Why exactly are we removing a ban on offshore oil and gas exploration?
Because what happens is when we put the ban in place, or the previous government put the ban in place, all it did was increase the amount of petroleum products that we exported from offshore. And it undermined some of our own energy resiliency and sovereignty in terms of what we could rely on here if we needed to. So we've made the call, well, actually we haven't made the call, I guess we're taking decisions on removing that ban in the next quarter. And it's important for us because we believe very strongly that the ETS is what's going to drive emissions down. And the way the ETS works is that it will take account of all emissions from the oil and gas sector, so that if you increased exploration there, then you need to have a corresponding offset or decrease in emissions in another sector. So overall, the cap on emissions would continue to lower, so that what really matters is where can you get the best value emissions reductions regardless of the modality or the type of those.
Right, so should we expect that repealing the ban would not increase overall emissions in any way from Aotearoa and should eventually move towards decreasing overall emissions in the future?
Yeah, because the two aren't actually related. I know it seems odd to say that, but the way that the ETS is set up is that it basically sets a bucket of emissions and it says you can emit as a country up to, and I don't know the exact figure off my head, but let's say it's 100 megatons or gigatons or whatever it is. You can emit up to that level as a country, and then every year we're going to decrease that level gradually until we get to the target that we need to make net zero. And so within that overall emissions budget, different sectors, different individuals, different industries can make decisions about their emissions. And if they have to emit, they pay for them through the credit system. And if they want to reduce their emissions, they'll get the benefit of that through the ETS as well. So whether or not we have more oil and gas exploration won't actually change the amount of overall emissions coming out of New Zealand.
There were some conversations, especially by Resources Minister Shane Jones, related to stockpiling oil and gas supplies moving into the future. Is this repeal moving any way towards that?
Not quite sure what the reference to that would be, but if you're talking about being able to have more supplies of energy onshore so that we can avoid some of the shocks, some of the logistics issues that happen when container ships become caught up or when shipping passages are blocked, I think that's a good thing for energy resiliency. I mean, we're a long way away from being totally independent of fossil fuels, if we will even get that way, because some parts of our country actually still will need them until we have the technology to catch up. So it's possible that it'll increase storage capacity. I mean, down in South Canterbury, we've got quite a range of petroleum and oil and gas product storage on our ports, and there's an opportunity there for us to increase that capacity down there if we're able to make good investment decisions, while also making sure we take care of the long-term sustainability of that sector and, of course, the environmental impact of any of those decisions.
Lastly, number 36 on the plan talks about taking decisions on the repeal of Section 7AA of the Oranga Tamariki Act, which broadly requires a degree of consideration and commitment by the organisation to Te Tiriti or Waitangi. Is the government planning to repeal this legislation, and if so, why?
Well, I can't get ahead of what the government's going to do. It is in the coalition agreement to repeal it, so my assumption would be that the decisions will be along that line. It's part of a coalition promise made by, I think it's an ACT Party policy put forward by Karen Shaw when she was a member. She had a members bill on this. And she's someone who's come from care of the state herself, so she has sort of lived experience in this area. And their view and the government's view is that when it comes to the welfare of children, we should be focused mainly prioritising their welfare regardless of their ethnicity or their background. Now, yet taking into account their welfare may well mean that we make decisions that enhance their cultural background, make sure they stay in touch with their whakapapa and their culture, and that where possible, Māori children are placed with Māori families and their own family. But you can have some situations around there where that's not the best decision for them. And there was a case that went around a few years ago, I think it was up in Napier, of a very caring, kind, loving family who adopted a young Māori girl, Moana, fostered her, and were led to believe that she would have a home there for life. But then Oranga Tamariki changed their mind and decided to put her back with her family, who arguably, and this is what the court, I think, decided as well, weren't best placed to actually take care of her, and that wasn't in the best interest of the child. So that's the aim of those reforms, but we'll see what the government comes out with in terms of the decisions they make.
Because Te Tiriti o Waitangi, you know, as Aotearoa's founding document, is quite important, I would say, to all government departments and most legal matters. Is there really that much harm in asking a government organisation to commit to following its principles?
Well, what are the principles of the treaty? They're kind of being defined by the courts over a few decades of jurisprudence. And sometimes when you're legislating, putting in concepts such as that, such as adhere to the principles of the treaty, when the principles aren't clearly outlined or defined, can make it difficult for governments to operate. And actually what you've seen in the New Zealand First National Coalition Agreement is a step towards looking at all the individual treaty clauses and legislation and being very specific about how they're supposed to give power to the treaty. And so that's I think, the area that you more want to move into rather than broad stroke statements about upholding the principles of the treaty, because what that could mean to one department might be different to another, and you want to have some consistency across government.
Acknowledging the case you mentioned earlier, obviously, as a situation where perhaps Section 7AA might have worked against the efficiency or effectiveness of Oranga Tamariki, more broadly, our Tamariki Māori have been historically treated poorly, or perhaps they haven't experienced the best outcomes coming through Oranga Tamariki, and they continue to be overrepresented in the care and protection system. With provisions like 7AA being put in place to address these historical issues, is the government offering any replacement for Section 7AA to address these issues?
Well, first of all, I totally agree with the concept that, children in general, but Māori children have been overrepresented in Oranga Tamariki, and that has caused a lot of damage to many, many families. And so ideally you want a situation where we have a country where Oranga Tamariki doesn't exist and we don't have to make decisions about removing children from dangerous and dysfunctional situations. I don't know what the government's plans are on the repeal, so I can't comment on what's going to replace it. But there is a commitment to make sure that every child, whether they are Māori or non-Māori or Pacific or Asian or any ethnicity, are taken care of as a society and are well cared for when they are in the care of the state. And that should be regardless of your ethnic background, but acknowledging that we do live in a society where we are diverse and that we need to make sure that children's cultural needs are taken care of. So look, people shouldn't take any worry in the fact that we are focused on this stuff and our number one priority is the health and safety of these children.
That was the National Party's James Meagher speaking to me about the Coalition Government's new action plan.
That was our catch-up with National Party MP James Meagher.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.